Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello everyone and welcome to the first episode of our brand spanking new series, The Proper Class Podcast. I am of course Laura Checkley.
And I'm Hannah Chiswick.
And we are back, baby, to celebrate all things working class, because if we don't, who the bloody hell will, Ellie?
Who's Ellie?
Sorry, I've literally just binged the whole of The Last of Us. Are you watching it?
Not yet. I'm starting tonight.
Ellie is an icon. That's all you need to know about Ellie.
Thank you. As always, we sit down with a working class hero to celebrate their life and achievements and discuss just how they got to where they are today. So, on that note, Laura, who are we celebrating this week?
We are kicking things off right this series, let me tell you. Now, one might say that I've been pretty persistent in trying to, encourage this week's guest into coming onto the show. I mean, she might say she was hounded or bullied or indeed forced into doing it. But, you know, potato, potato, see you in court and all that. I've got her, and even if it's to finally get rid of me, and I don't give a rat's behind if that is the case, but she's here, and she's a belter, folks.
Well, who is it, please?
Right, sorry, yeah. This week's guest is quite literally the busiest gal in showbiz, and I'm not at all surprised because she is stupidly talented. She's an award-winning actress, writer and director. In 2017, she was listed as one of Europe's Forbes 30 Under 30, and in that same year was also named a BAFTA Breakthrough Brit. And then in that same year again, she won an RTS Award for Best Performance in Crazy Head.
Jesus. Didn't she also just win Best Breakthrough at the National Comedy Awards?
Yeah, she did.
Crikey, what a terrible time she seems to be having.
Lazy.
This week's guest has been gracing our screens for nearly a decade now in shows like, and this honestly is only scratching the surface, Chewing Gum, Crashing, Porters, Bluestone 42, Zapped, Year of the Rabbit, Truth Seekers, Peacock, and most recently, The Brilliant Cheaters.
Oh my God, I need to watch that. My fiance, Claire. Fiance?
You just wanted to say fiance.
I did just want to say fiance. She's literally obsessed with that show. Literally obsessed with it.
No stranger to the big screen either. This week's guest has starred in In Between Us 2, Save the Cinema, The Loneliest Boy in the World, The Beautiful Game, and of course, not forgetting the Netflix hit Enola Holmes 1 and 2.
And she is a damn fine stage actress too, currently in rehearsals for Never Have I Ever, soon to be seen at the Chichester Festival. But long before all of that, she has been treading the boards all over the shop, mate. Regent's Park, where she played Bottom in A Midsummer Night's Dream. I'd love to see that. She's done the Royal Court, Sheffield Crucible, Donmar Warehouse, Manchester Royal Exchange, West End, and of course the bloody National, darling. And she's even made it over to Broadway too in Phyllida Lloyd's production of Julius Caesar.
I mean, anyone would be happy with that lot when they were turning 80.
I know, and
I get the feeling she's actually just getting started.
No, she is actually just getting started. Lads, I have long admired this week's guest work from afar. She's without a doubt one of the most exciting talents this country has to offer, and it's wonderful to see her shining so brightly, especially because she's one of us working class gals. Listeners, please give a very warm, proper class podcast welcome to comedy ledge and soon to be my new best friend, Susan McComber!
I think we're lucky she's still here and not ran
she's
away
gone.
From you.
Hello, Susan, where are you? Oh, she's gone.
That was unbelievable.
Like, I told you it'd be excruciating.
Oh my God, that was like, I don't know, that felt like being, you know, like being born, but like backwards. It felt like being shoved back into the womb very violently. That's the only word.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
No, but do you honestly sit there and go, Oh, fuck yeah, I forgot I did that.
I am now getting to the point where, because I used to have a really good memory. I'm now getting at the point where I'm like, did I do that? Was I in that? Oh, it was.
Yeah.
Because you know when you meet, when you're starting out, you meet older actors and they go, they just genuinely don't remember what they've done.
Yeah. And I remember you sometimes. I've met older actors in bars and gone, hi, love. And they're like, I'm so sorry. Which job? Where was it?
Yeah, fair enough.
Fair enough, because that's how I'm getting now.
That's how I'm getting now. Yeah. So I do feel a bit like, yeah. That was a bit of an out-of-body experience. Thank you.
Is it nice to hear it? Like, to go like, oh, actually, blimey, that's all right.
Yeah, because I feel like as an actor, you're sort of, you're definitely just trying to get by day. It's like a real kind of process of just one foot in front of the other. So when somebody goes, this is what you've done, especially because it wasn't like on the cards. It wasn't like like a lineage that I was just picking up the baton and going, and now it's my time.
My turn. Yeah.
So it does feel a bit mad. It feels
mad. Yeah, which makes it even more incredible, I think, you know, like, and also didn't you like, you've literally only graduated when, because you went to RADA, right? Which we'll get to later. I really want to talk to you about RADA. Yeah. We probably both do, right? But yeah, like, I was looking at that and I was going back to when you like graduate and I was like, she's done all of that in that amount of time. What the fuck? Like, it's truly, honestly incredible and you should be super proud of yourself.
Oh, thank you.
Let's start off like we do every episode, and we always ask our guests if they could take us back to a time and place that connects them to their working class roots. Where would you take us?
I would take you back to Elephant and Castle Shopping Centre. Yeah. Rest in peace.
We love it there.
I literally love
it. It's gone now. It's gone.
I know. Gutted.
All for a load of flats in it. It's just
posh flats as well.
Yeah, really ugly, like, space now. But oh my God. So I went to three different primary schools. So I was born in Peckham, then we moved to Camberwell, and then sort of settled around just off Wharf Road, in between Kennet and Wharf Road. And my primary school, St John's Woolworth, which has also closed down, only found this out last year, because it's like a 150-year-old school. Like, the church, there's like a little church attached to it. It's been there 150 years. And it's closed down because there's no families in the area.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
There's none.
Yeah.
None in that area. So there wasn't enough kids to go. So it's all closed down. But what I used to do is, after school, I would walk from Wharf Road down to Elephant and Castle. And it was just like, it was like Hollywood to me. The bright lights of W.H. Smith, Woolworths. I bought my first CD there.
The bright lights
there.
Of W.H. Smith.
The bright lights, the twinkling lights, a peacock. So I used to be like, oh, one day I'll buy that vest, the three for two vests. One day.
You loved a bit of peacock.
I'm not being funny. I still love
You've
a peacock.
You've got many a dress still from peacock.
I still love a peacock.
Because it went to catalogue and you love a catalogue, didn't you? Well, you did do anyway.
I did love a catalogue, yeah.
Oh my God, we so love Littlewoods. My mum buying sofas that she really could not
still
afford.
Still paying them off.
Well, I don't have to pay for it for 3 years, but you will eventually have to pay for it, mum.
It's only 50p a week.
Yeah.
Lovely. For the rest of your life.
I nearly didn't get my mortgage because it turned out once in 1996 I hadn't paid back Littlewoods for a pair of jeans. They were like, there's a default on your credit file. I was like, what is this? And it was for like some $12.99 jeans. I nearly didn't get the mortgage. I was like, only me. I'm like, did you once take out something with Littlewoods? I was like, oh, for God's sake.
Oh, that's
anyway, carry on. We're at Elephant and Castle.
No, I just loved it there. And because you had the bowling alley right at the top. And then you had Woolworths, which, you know, sweets that you used to nick. You always did. They were there. They were asking for it.
Full of germs. It doesn't matter.
Full of germs. We loved it. It made us resilient. And then my favourite shop, which actually was still, when it closed down in 2021, I think, or was it last year? I can't remember. It was still there. It was Price Busters. Now, I've got a thing for, like, what do they call them? They're sort of those shops where you can buy, like, a dustpan and brush, chocolate.
Oh, my God. Shoes. Susan, we're exactly the same. Yes. Like, it's when we get a coffee, our ideal afternoon is going out, coffee, and going to what we called an old toot shop.
Full of old toot.
An
full of old tut, yeah.
Lovely.
We used to call it a bric-a-brac shop.
Full of old tut, yeah.
Full of old tut. It was like my dream. They used to be like these really smelly diaries. That was really in. Like the diary pages smelt like...
That bubblegum flavour,
Bubblegum flavour, a bit musty. I used to be in there for, like, honestly... How they used to just let me, and I was just flicking through like those massive pencils with fluffy tops on them. And I'd be like, one day I'll be able to get one. It was like my happy place, and I did still like well into adulthood. We used to go back there and just walk around. So yeah, Elephant and Castle Shopping Centre is.
Oh, it's a bit of sadness about that. That was like a real, to me, that was like when I'm a South London girl, and that was like the gateway. You knew we're heading south.
Yes.
Like you'd get to Elephant, you'd be like, I'm in my bit of London now. Yeah. Turn left at Elephant, down the Woolworth Road. And I was like, yeah, I'm heading back to my bit of London. I took my son, I live out of London now, and I was driving past, I didn't know. And I was like, oh, Isaac, I'm going to show you this, like this really cool place called Elephant and Castle. Oh. And there's an actual, and I was like, oh.
Gone.
Oh, it's gone. Yeah, it felt like a real
transient.
Really, really sad, yeah.
But do you know what? We got when I was about 14, we got plans through the door from Southwark Council saying, hey, we're gonna spruce up Elephant Castle Shopping Centre, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. And I was like, yeah, it deserves a bit of love. And it has it's taken this long for them to do anything. I remember they did have one red nose day where they were like, we're gonna paint the whole thing red, and they ran out of red paint, so it was half red for years.
So let's take you back to school then. So you said you went to school down the old Kent Road. I know you said a couple of primary schools. What was your, did you go to sort of state senior school?
Yeah, I went to a state senior school, high school called St. Saviour's and St. Olav's, which is just on the, it's like the roundabout before it goes on to Old Kent Road.
That sounds posh to me, like, because it's all, you know, St. something. They sound they were quite posh to me.
They were trying it in our school. They were like, you ladies are diamonds in the rough. And we were like, fighting with like Notre Dame and all the other girls' schools in the area were like, yeah, sure, we're ladies. Yeah, got it. Like proper going to Bacon's College and having fisticuffs down there. It was stupid. But opposite us, directly across the road, was another school called, God bless it, Geoffrey Chaucer, which was one of the worst schools in London, directly opposite us. So we'd be like, right, we're ladies. And they would just be like screaming over there. But my brother went to that school. So I would be like, oh, I'm a lady. And then my brother would be like, Suze, can we go home? And I'd be like, I'm not a lady. And so, like, we were really, really trying it. But I didn't hate school. I really just had no time for it.
Were you academic?
I did this thing where I'd pretend to be academic and then everybody believed that I was. And then it took me a while to realise that that was acting.
Yeah, sure. Were you like desperate for a pair of glasses? Because like growing up, like having a pair of glasses, you were clever.
Oh,
I still
gosh.
Think that now. I think, oh, she looks clever.
But they took us en masse to Specsavers on Woolworth Road when I was in primary school to get our eyes tested. And I crossed my eyes. I was like, oh, I think that's a H. I think it's a, is that a J? And they're like, it's a Z. I was like, oh no, I think I'm going to have to get some glasses. So I've got glasses. Because I'm called Susan, I should wear glasses.
Right?
Oh, my God, honestly, when I was 14, I did exactly the same thing. But I said I was having really bad headaches. And
did
I got
you?
These, like they were, like, bottom of the bottle kind of, you know, like, real round. Like, at the time, I thought these round were really cool. But then they started giving me headaches.
Yes.
And then my mum was like, I thought the head... I was like, yeah, so I sort of lied, but they would give me really bad headaches.
Oh,
yeah,
my
so
God.
I wore glasses. Idiot. Yeah, and I was 14, so I thought, I'll look really clever. That's so funny.
I know. I loved it. But to be honest, I did want to wear the glasses, but... It was because they had the glasses were in those glasses cases that you could like clip onto your jeans, and it was really colourful and plastic. I actually wanted that. And as a result of wearing glasses for so long when I didn't need them, I now need glasses.
Oh my
God.
So messed up my
eyesight. Careful what you wish for.
Be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you wish for. But yeah, I sort of just, not that I sort of lied, but I just sort of sat straighter. And everyone was like, yeah, Susan's clever. But, like, I didn't have that much to show for it. But everyone just thought I was really smart. It was funny. It was really strange.
And were you doing drama at school? How did all that start? What's the start of your sort of acting?
The start of it, I didn't really do that much drama. In the end, I did do GCSE drama. But the way that it happened was actually because I had like this addiction, which I think could have grown into gambling, but it didn't, which is good. I would enter competitions and I would like win them. I just had the lucky streak as a kid. So what,
like phone-in ones.
I once applied for a competition to win a bus pass for a year and I got it. Like, yes! It was really magazine thing. I did this thing for Ms. Magazine where it was just like, take pictures of your friends and the best pictures, you win a photo shoot. In year seven, I didn't know anyone. I just went to five girls and I was like, I've bought a black and white camera from Boots. Let's go in the playground. Let's go. We did it. We won. Went to Planet Hollywood for lunch. Did a photo shoot. We're on the front cover of Miz. It was nuts.
Oh my God. Have you got that? Have you still got that? Have you got a copy of it?
I do still have it.
That is so amazing.
With these like other girls from Southeast London, we just barely knew each other. We were like two terms in and I was like, these are my best friends.
Oh my God.
Modelling.
I don't think I've really won anything. Like, I don't do the lottery, but when I do it on the odd occasion, I think I'm going to fucking win because, you know, I don't usually do it and I'm doing it and there's a reason I'm doing it today.
Yeah.
You've not won, though.
Claire calls in. She goes in this morning and she's like, I think I'm going to win this today.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, she still does it. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, she's like, I want to win that house. Never do.
I know, that's the thing. Now, that's the thing. When I did it, it was like, win a bus pass, win some sweets. Now it's like, you could win your salary
win a
for
whole
a year.
New life.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be funny, but winning a year's bus pass now would be pretty...
I know,
would be thrilled. Really lucrative, wouldn't it? Be pretty good.
Genuinely so you're handy. Winning all this stuff. You're suddenly like winning competition queen.
Yeah, so competition queen. And then I applied... There was this thing that was on... Because CBBC used to watch it all the time. There was this thing called CBBC Talent, which was this initiative. And they had this TV show called... it was called Serious Jungle and it was dressed up as a conservation. So, we're going to take kids to the Malaysian jungle and it's going to be about nature. And I was like, that sounds cool. I applied and I got it. And I was I can swear, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I was like,
you're good company, babe.
Good. I was fucking terrified. I'd never been on a plane. I didn't have a passport. I was 14 at the time.
Where did you have to go?
We went to Malaysia.
Oh, Malaysia. Sorry,
we went to the Bornean jungle. I was like holding an orangutan going, what the fuck is my mum trying to explain that to my mum? Also, because I had to have a guardian with me. I couldn't just go off to these auditions. And like when I got to like the finals, we had to go to Cumbria and do like an adventure week. Explaining that to my cleaner mum, I was like, mum, you have to come with me because I'm going to go to Cumbria. She's like, where's that? I was like, I don't know. But we have to go there and then maybe I might get into this TV show where I have to go to Malaysia. She was like, where's that? And I was like, I don't know. And then I'm going to be like helping orangutans. And she's like, what are those? I was like, they're cute monkeys. And so we went and then I got the news that I was going to be on the show, was getting like a malaria jab, staring at my mum like, this has gone too far.
I feel like there's a movie here, Susan. Have you written? You need to write this.
Some terrified kid just on a plane going,
Did your mum go, yeah, okay, cool, off you go. Off you trot.
I mean, by that point, I'd really carved out a niche of being a weirdo. So she was just like, guess this fits into your weird life. But it was strange because we did a TV show and it went out on CBBC. I became like mini famous at school. And then, like, we were going to places like BBC Television Studio, which I'd never been to before, but seen on TV. And then, like, our exec, Marshall, he really took a shine to me. And so, like, when I said, oh, you know, what is an edit? I don't know what an edit is. So he let me, sit in the edit and, like, watch how it's all put together. And that was kind of where I learned about, like, it wasn't acting, but it was just media. And I thought, I want to get a job where I get to go to BBC TV Centre. I just wanted to, like, work for the BBC. I didn't know doing what. I didn't really know. And then I found, like, this little leaflet in our music block, which was for... Because at that time, I will say, like, from... When was I at St. Saviour's? From 1999 is when I started. around that time and around the area, there were loads of initiatives for young kids. There were loads of things, loads of clubs. There was this thing around the corner called Connections where you could literally go in and you could get counselling, you could get help with, like, you know, your studies, or if you're doing any applications for jobs. Like, all this stuff was around. They don't exist now. None of this stuff exists. Yeah, right.
So that was Labour then, wasn't it? Labour government.
It was Labour. I'm a Labour kid. Yeah. I'm a education, Tony Blair before he fucked it up. Like, that is me.
Right.
Sunny days. So there was this thing called Saturday Live, which was a Saturday drama group that was run by English National Opera. And you did, like, one hour of dance, 1 hour of singing, 1 hour of drama. And I just thought, oh, like, I guess I could do that. So I'll apply. And if I enjoy it, then I'll do it. And that's kind of how I applied. I got in.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm quite good at this. And then everyone told me that was quite good at it. And I was like, okay, I'll be an actor. That's how it happened.
And that's how it starts for most working class kids, doesn't it? Stumbling into something. Yeah. And then, having the opportunity, it's the opportunity, and it's a starting point that we all need to talk about. And it's just, it feels so impossible now.
Oh,
like I'm
almost certain I wouldn't be an actor if I was,
yeah,
you know, that age 100%. Now. None of the things exist. Like, regardless
the entry
of whether,
points. Yeah.
Doesn't exist. There's been a lot of things that have been in the way and that I've had to overcome in order to do the job that I do. That Labour government, you know, regardless of what you think of Labour now or whatever, that Labour government at that time, there was opportunities coming out of our ears. And it didn't have to be to do with drama. It was just having clubs and things. And I remember that. I was
places
surrounded
to go.
By that. Places to go.
Yeah.
Places to go.
Is it at that, what do you call it? Saturday Live?
Saturday Live.
I love that. Sounds really cool. It sounds like a...
Minute we finish this, I'm Googling it.
It sounds like a TV show for kids on a Saturday morning, isn't it? Did you... was it there that you heard about RADA and...
Yeah.
Drama schools in general.
Yeah. So I didn't know about drama schools, never heard of it. And it was there that I heard about. So we had a singing teacher. This is funny. Claim to fame. The singing teacher, which was a young Gareth Malone. So Gareth Malone did the choir, all of this, all of that stuff. This is before he got into the College
how
of
amazing.
Music. So he was like a baby. And it was teaching all these, like, young, brown, like, it was completely diverse, the group of us. But loads of, like, brown kids about opera. And we were just like, we just want to sing Mariah Carey.
Sorry, like, Gareth, but...
No, Gareth.
Shit it up.
And he was just like, no, not you. So he would teach us music. And then this amazing woman called Maria would teach us drama, and she's like one of my best friends now. And it was her. She was the one who was like, you're really good. You're like really good. Have you heard about drama school? You should apply. And Gareth as well was like, you should apply. They were explaining to me all these different schools. They're in London, so you don't have to leave. Like,
right.
I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, that's great. And so that's where I sort of just learned about all of that stuff. And then they told me about National Youth Theatre. I applied, I got into that. And so I'd spend summers, because that was Saturday Live was during term time. So then in the summers, I would go off and do shows. Again, a lot of it was in London. And then we had some projects that were outside of London. And I would go off in the summer and I'd do that. So it was a mix of those two things that made me go, oh, actually, I really want to do this. And I think I'm good. So then I had to take a year out after school to raise money to apply for drama school, because like you say, you have to pay for the auditions.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's mad now, because that was cheap then.
Yeah,
that was cheaper than it is now to apply. But I had I went to go and work at Madame Tussauds and raise money so I could apply for drama school and, like, buy all the, you know, monologue books and hang out at the National Theatre bookshop and just go over everything.
Looking clever
with my glasses. My glasses and my terrible eyesight. And it was those two things.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you're saying like you're going into all those places and, you know, finding a monologue, did you feel like out of place, or did you feel like these places felt really... I don't know, like, I know I would have felt like that going into the National Book Library or wherever and going, oh, dear, I don't feel like I belong here. I still feel like that when I walk into the National now and I bloody work there. I still feel like I don't belong there. But how did it all feel, like, walking into RADA the first time? And
I think this is where, like, being a Londoner was really cool. So, like, with the National, because that's on the South Bank. So I was just like, that's my end. Like, that's mine.
Yeah.
That belongs to us. So when I swanned in there, even though it took a very long time before I actually went in the building, but like when I got there, I was like, yeah, I can literally walk home. This is my manor. Like, you can't tell me anything.
Yeah.
But then I'd be like, I don't understand, there's so many books. And the staff were always really lovely. I remember that. They were always, I would just say, I haven't got a clue. And they were really lovely to me. So I loved that. But what we did do, when I did eventually do drama at school and I did like A-level drama, our teacher, Mark Pattenden, who was a nutter, he would say, he would book out all these shows at the National and we would go to all of them. So that was when I first went to National.
What, would he pay for them?
Yeah.
He'd pay for them and everything.
Yeah.
Wow, what a guy.
So then we would all go en masse. And I remember we would all get like dressed up. We'd get all really dressed up. To go to the National, and like most of it we didn't like, but that was how it was, because he wanted us to feel like we belonged in those buildings. So we would regularly go. It didn't have to be part of the curriculum, didn't have to be something that we discussed at school. It was just like, we're all going to the theatre. And so that, I think, was the thing that made me feel more comfortable in those buildings. Like, I didn't belong. I would sort of remind myself, this is my city. Like, no, no, no.
I love that.
Can be in these buildings.
And did Rada feel the same? Did you think, yeah, this is in my city and I've earned my place?
No.
No, not so much.
I sort of like bopped in the first day.
It's a posh building though, isn't it? Yeah, that building is like, what the fuck? People like... acting here?
Yeah,
it's like a museum. Well, from what I can remember, I might have made it up in my head.
It's like the front of it. It's got like these two statues and it says the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art. And it is very kind of looming. Yeah. And I remember on my first day, I met up with another actress called Alexandra Roach, who's one of my best friends.
Oh, I love her. She's amazing.
And we sort of met, we got on the bus and then we like stood outside. We literally walked through the doors together. We were like, Oh my God, here we go. But it was just one of those things where it did feel like the rest of London outside, and then you walk through these doors and then you're in some kind of like capsule of something else. And it took me a long time to, did I ever feel fully like I belonged there? No, but I think quite a lot of people felt that. I think a very small, you know, percentage of people walk into RADA and feel like they absolutely belong.
Yeah. And do you feel like they embraced your working classness, or did they try to rinse it out of you?
I don't know what it's like now, but when I was there, the big focus was on voice. Your voice. Mm-hmm. Which makes sense. If you're doing a play 8 times a week,
yeah, sure.
Your voice is going to be absolutely mashed if you don't know how to look after it, you know. I've done plays where I've had to be screaming and crying. If you don't know how to look after your voice, you'll ruin your voice. You'll get hurt and all that sort of stuff. So all that stuff is really, really valid. But the thing that I found very difficult was there was so much emphasis on received pronunciation, which is RP, which is basically a posh accent. Which for me is it's an accent. It's like being able to do a Scottish accent. It's like being 100%. Able to do, you know, that's what it is. But the kind of centre of it was, of our training was, we need to get you to a neutral, because you've acquired all these different habits, and you know, actors have their little tics and their little things that they rely on. And what we're trying to do is strip you of all of that. You have to be the neutral actor, that, you know, sort of, you know, level one, grade one actor. And from there, we'll build you up and all of that stuff. My issue was, who is that grade one, level one actor? Who is that genesis? Who is that beginning? Because they don't look like me. They don't have the same body shape as me. They don't have the same voice as me. They don't come. And I felt that neutral was a white man, basically.
Yes.
A posh white man. That was what that sort of untampered with actor was. And whether the teachers were directly aware of that, or whether they were just teaching what they've always taught, I kept going, this doesn't allow for your uniqueness. And it's actually saying that everything that has happened to you, everything that you've experienced before, is not useful. And one of the one class that made me go, oh, this is bullshit, is Alexander Technique, which we had quite a lot. So this is basically your posture. It's about helping you get as much lung capacity so that you can bloody, you know, hit it all the way
and
to the back.
And you can have a bit of a lie down, can't you?
Have a bit of a lie down, a little bit of, you're like, oh, yes. One. It's basically a massage.
I used to fall asleep all the time, yeah.
Me
yeah.
too, always. Lovely, lovely. But I remember one session, right, I was lying on my front and one of our teachers was like trying to smooth my lower back. She was like, oh, you're holding a lot of tension in your lower back. I was like, am I? She's like, yeah, a lot of tension. It's like you're arching your back. And I just went, oh, no, that's my bum. Because I got a big batty. Because I got a big bum.
Yeah.
And she was like, no, you're holding it. You're arching. I was like, no, that's...
my shape.
My shape. Like, I'm from African... Nigerian descent, like some of us, a lot of us have, you know, a bit of a curve. And she was like really trying to like knead my bum into my
shape
back.
Out of you. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my
and
God.
That's when I was like, oh, okay. So I've got to learn how to get all that lung capacity, knowing that my back doesn't basically merge into my ass, which, you know, I'm quite happy that it doesn't. But that was like the real moment that I thought, oh, they're actually trying to change something that is just my body. And so I have to take some of the things that they say about who that neutral actor is with a massive like bag of salt, because it's not all of it. It's not designed for me. So
with all the technique in the world, you ain't never going to be a white, posh, old white man.
No.
Are you? Do you know what I mean? And nor would any of those things be what you bring to the table. Or
who'd want to
be that?
Who'd want it? And that's not what I wanted. I didn't, and I think that one of the things, when I say the discernment, was going, you do get told like what you should want to do.
Sure.
You should want to play, you know, going to the RSC and playing this character and that character. And some people, oh my God, some people were gagging for it. And some people in my year absolutely did it. I preferred doing Shakespeare when I was doing youth theatre, when I was doing it at school. There was just something about drama school that absolutely took out the love that I had for it. And I think the fearlessness, like the attack of it, I just lost it because I was like, oh, there's like a way you're meant to do it. And I just, my thing is like, as long as you can hear me, like fucking do what you want. And it really muddied it for me. So I had to really kind of.
Such a shame, isn't it? Yeah. I think at its worst, drama school, that's a story we hear a lot. And I hear with, you know, in rehearsal rooms all the time, like drama school can really knock the love out of you. Mm-hmm. And something is awry when that's what's happening in those institutions, that it's actually taking young people with passion and, you know, raw talent and actually going, what you have is not the right thing. It's not the right commodity. You must change. Yeah. And actually, you know, and so many people leave drama school having to rediscover their passion they went
rediscover
in with.
Rediscover their passion, rediscover themselves. And I know that I needed to go to drama school because there were tons of stuff that I did learn, like, the biggest thing I'd say is like all the tools that you have, like all the voice exercises and all of that. And then some of the like the Stanislavski stuff and all of that sort of like actors training and personalization and all those sort of things. Those things are really, really useful when you have a bad fucking day. When you get some news, and you've got to go on stage and you've got nothing in the tank and you can't connect. And you've just got to pull it out of the bag because the audience do not give a shit. That's where all of that stuff that I learned, I was like, how
you
repeat it.
Makes you fucking hardy.
Makes you hardy. Yeah. And that's the thing that I love about my training.
When you came out of that training and you sort of, there you are and sort of like thrown back out the doors of RADA in the like, bright light of London again. What was your first job and what... How did your career get going?
Well, my first job was a CBBC show called Hotel Trouble.
Amazing.
All that training, you end up back.
All that training, and I'm doing CBBC. I was just like, right, okay. And I was taken over from an actress who'd gotten ill. And so, again, all this like Stanislavski and, you know, writing your character's biography, they were what name do you want your character to be called? What's your measurements? Where that go? And I was like, oh.
And did you have an agent, Suze? Did you get one out of
RADA? I did.
RADA.
Right.
Yeah. And this was the first job.
Yeah, this is my first job. I got an agent right at the end. Right at the end. I think...
That amazes me. That just amazes me.
Yeah, no. I would get things like a couple of agents would stop me after a show and say that I was very good. They thought that was really good. And then like, I would never hear from them.
Blimey.
And I knew what that meant. Because I knew what that meant. It meant like, you are good, but like we couldn't sell you and you wouldn't work. Like I knew that.
What would we do with you?
What would we do with you?
Yeah.
Too hard work.
So what? So you're knocking back around at CBBC, Mason. What sort of, in your mind, what would you say was like a break for you? A moment that was like, oh, okay, this is a bit of a game changer here.
I would say it was a job, which is quite sweet actually, because Michelle, this includes you, mate. Michelle, your producer. It was actually a job called Bluestone 4-2 that I did.
Yeah.
Because it was like my very first recurring character. But from what I remember, I could be wrong, I don't think she was meant to be a recurring character. I think she was only meant to be in one or two episodes and then I ended up being in three. And I flew out to South Africa with the team. And this was like the third series. So they were very kind of all established and stuff. And it was just... the first time that I was able to get my teeth into a character for more than just a day, basically.
Yeah.
And I'd always loved comedy, like as a punter. So me not being an actor, if I had to choose what to watch, it would always be comedy. And I'd always been told that I was funny. And I definitely felt that at drama school and all of that. But it wasn't, I didn't say that I was going to, you know, I went to RADA. I didn't go to RADA to become a comedian, which is really funny because the other person in my year is Daisy May Cooper. Same thing.
Yeah, so, I was going to say.
Yeah, but then like comedy was just, that was like the door that sort of opened that all up. And then I started doing like tons of comedy after Bluestone. That was like the big sort of like, and also I got to go abroad and I got to have a really good time. And, you know, when else was I going to go to Cape Town? And there I was doing like this job with really great people who knew the area. So it felt very sort of a lived in thing and fun, really fun.
And what did your mum feel about all of this?
That's exactly. I was going to say,
did your mum go to any RADA shows and like, how did all that feel like?
No, it was quite, and this is a story, this is very like common, I'd say, for a lot of children of West African parents, very Billy Elliot, where your parents don't want you to do this. And like I said before, because I was clever at school, acting, pretending, sitting up straight, my parents were convinced I'd be a doctor. Why they thought that, I had very sort of middling science results, but they were convinced.
Your wonderful posture, of course.
Yeah, it's because she's got a good back. So that's why I'm just a doctor. But so even when I did the Saturday drama group, I had to do that very quietly. Mm-hmm. I had to sneak out.
Did you?
You know, sneak out of home on a Saturday morning where it was like all my other friends were sneaking out to do bad shit. I was like, you know, I want to go and be a treat. Like, that's what I was doing. And I knew instinctively to keep this on the D-low.
Yeah, yeah.
And then similarly, I have an older sister who had always shown really amazing talent for singing. And there's something about music and singing that's like a very immediate thing. Like you say, I can sing, you sing, and everyone goes, you can sing. So that sort of made sense. So it's kind of like the creative artist slot had been taken.
Yeah.
And so I knew I have to keep this really quiet. Even when I picked GCSE drama, my dad was like, why? Why are you doing that? And so I had to pick double science as well to like like, no, I do want to do science. Double of it. Like, I love science, which is so annoying. So then, I just knew that I had to keep it really quiet. Even when I applied for RADA, I kept it really quiet. I said to my parents that I was saving money for me to go to university and they thought I was being really clever. And then, and I've told this story a few times, I applied for RADA in secret. And I got in and I didn't tell anyone. And then they sent a fucking letter going like, congratulations. And my dad opened it. And that's how he found out that I got into drama
school.
And
was he furious?
Furious.
Wow.
He was furious. And he said that if I'm going to train at drama school, that I couldn't live at home. So I had to move out.
No way.
Yeah. I didn't live at home the whole time.
Oh my God. So the one thing that was like the real benefit of going to drama school in London,
precisely,
like having a home base that was here and you have to move out.
Yeah, out. And so it was my Saturday Live drama teacher, Maria Leaf. I told her about this and she said, okay, come and live with me. So stayed with her. And
oh my God.
Yeah, it was a lot. Yeah, it was a lot. And
of course,
there was something that I found out a few years ago, where, because I did think, God, she always really liked me and I was clearly a favourite. But she was so fast to be open with her home. And I remember thinking, God, that was really, really kind. And now that I'm older and we're friends, she does see me as her daughter, but like we're friends and she's working class. She's from Leeds and she teaches in loads of different schools around London. And so when we were talking about that time, she said, what used to happen is before you would turn up, because the place where we did Saturday Live was at a school called St. Marylebone, which is a state school, but it's kind of fancy. It's a fancy state school. And but they have great drama facilities, like amazing drama facilities. And so I used to travel from Elephant and Castle, 453 bus, which I would always bunk because I didn't have money, all the way to literally Marylebone. So it would be a long hour. And as I would travel, my dad used to ring up Saturday Live, and he used to, God rest his soul, he's not with us anymore, but he used to like hurl abuse at them. Because he was just like, wow. You with your new age, dramery, pagan crap. And say all this stuff. Then I would turn up like, hi. And
And she kept that from you. Oh, wow.
She kept that from me until, I think like maybe, it was maybe 4 years ago she mentioned it. She was like, oh, wow. Yeah, your dad used to call in. So we all knew that you were in an environment that wasn't supporting this, which is why we were all like, drama school, have you heard? I did think, wow. Like, they're doing the most. And it's because they knew that people at home didn't support it. So it's been really odd,
God,
my career,
so tough.
And that relationship. Yeah.
Your dad, really, obviously, you're saying, like, your dad's no longer with us, but did he live long enough to see you become successful? What did he think about, as it obviously became clear that this was a really viable career for you?
And I mean, he passed away 2 years, 2012, so like 2 years after I graduated. And I got my first film, which I was able to tell him about, and it was being shot in Nigeria.
Wow.
And so when I told him, oh, I've got this film and it's being shot in Nigeria, and I'd never been to Nigeria before because we could never afford it.
Sure.
Like, the sort of dream is that your parents take you to Nigeria so that you can see your ancestry, and we just could never afford it.
No.
And so I got this job that kind of similar to the Bluestone 4-2 thing, in terms of like, you get a job and it takes you somewhere, which is amazing, that you would never go to. I got my very first film, and it was being filmed in Nigeria and really close, right, to where my parents are from. So I feel like that news made him go, oh, wow, like, that's where it can take you home. This job, this profession that I thought was so other and, you know, scary. And he was like a super Christian guy. That's why he was like, they're all evil. All they do is sleep with each other. And I'm like, that is true.
That is true.
That,
to be
true,
fair,
that is very true. That does happen. But less blood rituals. Like, that's
Than you might imagine.
That's a bit less.
Less sacrifice, bit more like,
Yeah, a bit more sex. So, yeah, being able to tell him that I've got this job that is, you know, it was based on the book Half of Yellow Sun, which is about the Biafran War. It's about the history of Nigeria, was like a big thing for him. But the kind of, I've spoken about this before as well, but the day I arrived in Nigeria, he passed away. So he didn't get to see it. But there definitely was in those 2 years, I think, like, he was just quietly looking at me going, she's not asking me for help, because I'm very proud, very working class as well, isn't it? It's like, I am suffering. I will not ask for help.
I will ask no one.
I will suffer through
can't
this.
Can't even borrow a pound, babe.
Can't borrow a pound.
Can't even
so
do it.
So he was just quietly watching me. And I think that there definitely was him kind of going, oh, you know, I've spoken to your aunt and she told me that you were in Holby City. I was like, yeah. He's like, why didn't you say? And I was like, because I've had to really unlearn that thing where you need people's approval. Because throughout drama school, I desperately wanted to, you know, do what other people were doing and go home for Christmas and, you know, have their, graduation was just the most painful thing.
I bet.
And like, third year shows, were, you know, parents would be there with flowers and I just never had any of that. In fact, my dad did come and see one show and he just, oh my God, because I had to kiss this guy in it and he was just like, what? No. I told you all having sex. And I was like, not with him, with him. Get it right. Wrong guy. That was like a complete disaster. But I mean, God, if he was alive now and he saw Cheaters,
he'd lose his shit, not so much, he wouldn't
love it. But so it was really, that was difficult, because you do, there is a bit of you that does want their approval, but he just, that was the thing, I had to learn to not want that because it was too painful to want it. So I started my career and I would just go off and do jobs and they'd always hear from an aunt or hear from somebody that I'm in this and like, why don't you tell us? And I'm like, I can't I can't tell you and get you in the wrong mood and you not support me because it hurts. I kind of just need to go off and do my own thing. And that to this day is how I don't really tell people apart from Instagram what I'm in. Like, if you want to know what I'm in, just go on my Instagram, like, and I'll tell you, and please watch. Like, that's great. But otherwise, it's kind of just my, I guess it's also protecting my love for it and not making it anybody's business and trying not to have.
I think that's really healthy, though. Yeah. I think it's actually really healthy to not, to it's your thing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what other people think. That must take so much pressure and give you so much freedom as an actor.
Yeah.
Obviously, we can't keep you forever, and there's so much more I want to cover.
Oh, my God, it's unbelievable.
We always ask our guests about, obviously, now all of us are coming at this from a place of privilege, and our guests say different things all the time. Mm. Do you still feel, I know our life now, we've all got a bit more money, you're comfortable. Yeah. I saw that you, I think you brought your own home, didn't you?
And stuff.
I saw that because I was like, I didn't even know you, and I saw on Instagram, I'm like, go on, girl, yeah, she's bought her own place.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're all coming at this from a place of privilege now. Do you still feel working class? Do you still consider yourself working class?
Yeah, I do. I do. I also feel like I am, this is going to sound really grand, but I also feel like I'm the dream of my ancestors. Like, I can't imagine, you know, that they would have thought that this would be possible, me talking to you from my own home.
Mm.
So I feel immense pride of the journey that I took, but also I feel very privileged because, like I said, there were all these things as a kid when I was growing up everywhere. So it's really weird. I don't necessarily go working class means no opportunities, because I was really lucky when I was a kid. Like, there were things, like, of course there were, God, I could go into all the things that weren't great, but we had places to go. My imagination was being fired up. I didn't need, you know, these weren't things that needed tons and tons and tons of funding. It was just a hall. Most of these halls are bloody gone now.
Yeah.
It was just a space. It was a room. It was some time. And, you know, teachers who weren't, you know, destitute and could give that extra hour after school.
Yeah.
So I feel, of course, I do feel working class, but I feel incredibly lucky, and I feel very heartbroken for people who are children, like young people who are working class now, to be honest. So it's kind of like weird. I do still feel it, but I feel like I've been very, very, very lucky. I do have a Cardo. Yeah, I do in a Cardo shop. Yeah, sure.
Like Laura said, honestly, we could probably do like 4 episodes just talking to you. I feel like we've literally got to your first
job.
Bonus ep. Yeah. But we like to end every episode by asking our guests, like, obviously, we've just started in celebrating all the amazing things that you've achieved. But if you could take a moment to celebrate or mention somebody who's a working class hero of yours, who would that person be?
That person would be, I've mentioned her a few times, Maria Leaf, who was my Saturday Live drama teacher. I probably will actually cry. she
sounds wonderful.
She's amazing. She's the funniest person. Like, sometimes I can't take her to theatre because she'll be like, that's shit. And I'm like, shh. Hey, I know these people now. I know them now. And she'd be like, that was
like,
shit.
Sounds
dick.
Like us at the theatre,
oh,
doesn't
I
it?
Know.
But she's amazing. She was the very first person who, like, saw me. I thought I was completely and thoroughly ordinary, which I sort of do still now. But she is, like, delusional in her belief in me to this day. I'll tell her something like, you know, Maria, I was a bit of a dick to this person. She was like, no, that person was a dick. You're right. You are right. You're always right. You're the best thing since sliced bread. And I'm like, I feel like we need some nuance here. And she'll be like, no, you're amazing. And do you know what? To have somebody in your corner like that, of course she has some nuance, but to have someone in your corner like that, and she's been like that since I was 13, I'm 35 now,
wow,
who just thoroughly, completely, wholly believes in me, sees me, understands me, is just like, you know, most people go through their whole lives and they don't find somebody who believes in them that much.
Yeah.
And she's still in my corner, and I just adore her. And the things that she's doing in the schools that she works in and the kids that she's working with and seeing them transform. Like, this wasn't a one-off. Like, she's she's in it.
She's
doing
that person.
She's that person,
isn't she?
And there's a litany of us kids who are now adults that she's changed their life. So, Maria Leaf, that's
what
the
woman. Wonderful woman. She's I've got to meet this woman. She sounds incredible. Well, we're celebrating Maria as well as you today, Susan. Thank you so much for coming on.
Amazing. Thank you.
Such a great guest.
No, and thank you so much for having me.
And good luck with the play.
Thank you. Yeah, the play.
Is there sex in that?
It is sexy.
Oh dear.
There's a little bit of sexiness.
Oh dear.
Yeah,
I'm not coming then.
Are you not coming? That's all right then.
No.
That's all right.
I mean, where even is Chichester?
It's like Sussex. It is Sussex. I had to check yesterday. Oh, listen.
Sounds posh. I'm out.
I am there with my Ocado. See you there. See you later.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, darling, for having me.
Right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh my God. What, do you know what? That's probably, I'd say that's one of the most moving of all that, like that story and having that drive to do all of that when you've got, like, I mean, I'm sure her family are wonderful. They sound wonderful, but to just not understand that part, so much part of her. And thank God for Maria.
Thank God for Maria. I know. And it's all those people along the way that, well, you need those people, don't you?
Absolutely.
It's impossible. She's so brilliant and wonderful. And I'm going to have some of that attitude, like, you know, it's just all for me and, you know,
it's doing
my
it
work
for myself.
I'm doing it for myself. I love that. Well, that's it.
Welcome.
What a great first week.
To the third series. How exciting. What a way to kick it off.
What are you doing now, Han?
I'm going back to rehearsals, darling, for the theatre.
Oh, for the theatre. You get going.
With one of our past guests, actually, with the amazing Debree Stevenson. So I get to spend 6 weeks in a room with her every day. And let me tell you, that is about as inspiring as you can get. So lucky me.
Oh, my God. Well, that's it for the first week. It's what a cracker, eh? Join us next week for a brand new guest. And remember, guys, till then, as always, keep it classy. The Proper Class podcast is produced by Michelle Farr-Scott for Rangabe Productions, edited by James Torrance, with music by Tommy Music. Please don't forget to like and subscribe. Spread the word. Tell your friends, neighbours, whoever will listen. We've also got an Instagram page. Ooh, get us. And you can follow all the news and goss at The Proper Class Podcast. And if you haven't nodded off yet, we've also gone and got ourselves an official email. So do get in touch. The email is properclasspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, folks. And remember, keep it classy.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.